This is Radio IBS Independent Broadcasting Service Liberty. I am Andreas Klum, host to Liberty and Peace Now. In October 2008, the human rights organization Per Aspera will celebrate its 40th anniversary. The human rights organization Per Aspera was founded in October 1968 by the author of several books and artist Michael Heise. He has studied literature with Stanford University in the United States of America and law with the university in the city of Gießen in Germany. In December 2008, the 100,000 White Roses campaign will take place in the city of Berlin, and I'm very thankful that I have the chance for an interview with Michael Heise. Radio IBS Liberty, Independent Broadcasting Service Liberty. My name is Andreas Klum. This is a special coverage about the foundation of the human rights organizations Per Aspera in 1968. In October 2008, the 40th anniversary of the human rights organization Per Aspera will be celebrated in Germany, North America, and even in Asia. Welcome on the program to Mr. Michael Heise. He is well known in Germany, Asia, and in North America. Mr. Michael Heise is an author of many books. He studied law with Stanford University in the United States of America, and he is an artist also. Welcome on the program. How are you doing?
Well, I'm just fine. I'm glad that I could be there.
What has brought you about 40 years ago to found, beside the famous human rights organizations such as Amnesty International, your human rights organization, Per Aspera?
Well, the main reason was that I got involved with the situation of Nelson Mandela. I visited in the 60s quite often South Africa, and I had a lot of troubles there. I was just very much opposed to the apartheid policy there. And then back in Germany, after I was kicked out of the country for using wrong stairways going down to the beach, which were actually only for colored people and others for white people, and I purposely used the stairs for the colored people because I have to believe since I was born that all human beings are the same regardless of color. And that wasn't taken too well in the South Africa of the 60s. So I was kicked out there, not allowed in for the next 10 years. And so I had a big interest when I saw, at that time, small articles in newspapers about the Nelson Mandela trial. And I got involved with Amnesty International, which was founded in 1963. And was one of the early members of that organization. But I had a lot of troubles there within the next years because they were not willing to accept, for example, Nelson Mandela as a case for amnesty. They said he is a criminal, he is convicted of murder, and we are not getting involved in that case. And many other cases they didn't get involved because it was too close and too dangerous, finally got me to a point where I decided to go on my own and stay a member of Amnesty, of course, because it's a huge organization and you can't completely disregard him. But I just wanted to have something which was closer to the people and smaller and better to overlook and more active. And that was the birth of Per Aspera.
Per Aspera ad Astra is actually taken from Latin language. Could you explain, please, what is the meaning of Per Aspera ad Astra?
Well, it works with you too, you see. By using only the half of this idiom, only saying Per Aspera and not saying ad Astra, raises questions because it belongs together. It means as much as through hard times going to the stars, to good times. So that you have to overcome hardship to get to a better life. That's the meaning of it. And But we, as our, in our organization, we are working with the per aspera, with the sadness, with the sorrows, with the trouble of people. And through our work, we want to get them to there ad astra. You know, this is the meaning of it.
How do you help people, and how do you take part to protect human rights and democracy?
Well, to protect democracy would be a big goal. It's not one of mine. I mean, you have to set your goals in a way that you can handle them. I'm involved in helping people which are imprisoned or their families which are in trouble because of their husbands, wives, fathers, mothers are in prison. I go after trials which are deeply unjust. I just try to help where human rights are really kicked with both feet. And so I also got involved in human rights issues in Iran, for example, in the last, it's also almost 40 years since finally the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, got kicked out of office. I think it was in 78. And even prior to that, I was already at the demonstrations in Paris where we hoped to get Khomeini out of his arrest and getting back in power in Iran. And it's finally worked, but it didn't work out well. But still, it's the issue till today, and you see that those issues don't go away easy. Today, the Mullah regime is not by far not better than the Shah regime was, and they're killing women and children on an almost regular daily basis, even by stoning women, and it's just awful. You see, those issues never go away. It keeps me young because the issue is always young. Human rights violations are just you. It's like when you're a fireman, you just go somewhere to a fire, you put it out finally, and you think it's done, and you're not quite home, and the next fire is burning somewhere. With your human rights issue, it's just the same.
Well, it's quite a horrible thing in the country of Iran. People, that means actually children and women, get stoned for actually nothing, because we probably have another opinion, we have different views compared with the governmental issues. How is it possible to explain such a thing, as women usually, you know, mean we like to protect women and children? How to explain such a thing that vulnerable people such as children and women get stoned in a country such as the country of Iran?
Well, if some people start to take the word of God in their own hands, and they try to make interpretations they think they're right, and they go back with 1,000 years in another time where things were said which had a completely different meaning, and they're translating that in our today's modern world, and they're making up rules which are, of course, only have one purpose. They have only which keeps them in power and increases their power, and they do that by terror against the people. This is just the weapons they are using. So it's all about power and power and power, nothing else.
Could you explain with what kind of issues and concern to protect human rights you deal in countries such as in Germany or in North America or even Pakistan?
Well, there's always two levels. There's one is a governmental issue. For example, like you can report about the success of the Great Britain government, and say indeed was it's a big step forward. The European Union still has not accepted the officially elected exile government from Iran until today, but the British did so a few months ago. So one more time, Great Britain shows the other European countries that you have to look at issues closer than they usually do. the Germans always wait until everybody else has jumped on the bandwagon, and then they will go finally too. But Great Britain has done so, and that will help. You know, the prime minister they elected is Mrs. Rajavi, and she will definitely be there for a better and democratic era if they want ouster the rulers. But the other level I'm working on is, of course, the personal issue. If someone is calling here, or someone else who he knows is calling here for him or her, then we are trying to help people. That, of course, has close limits where we some things we can do, others we can't do. So we try to put ourselves in connection with other bigger organizations, like in America, the ACLU, or the very powerful organization for the elderly, the AARP. They are doing a lot in issues of human rights, too. And, of course, also with Amnesty, we support Amnesty actions as well, and hoping that they once and a while will use their connections to help us in certain cases. So you do what you can yourself, and what you can't do, you try to do through other organizations, and if you can do none of that, you still have the possibility to pray.
You have studied law with the Stanford University of the United States of America. How it came to happen as you have been born in Germany?
I think there's a misunderstanding. I have studied law in Germany, and I have studied in Stanford literature.
Literature. And how it came to happen that you have studied literature with the Stanford University in the United States of America?
Well, I was very, the more I got, you don't have to forget, my life is very strange in a way. I went to the United States for 6 weeks on a visit because I was so much opposed to the politics of the United States. And my wife, my late wife, which is dead now, she complained and said, "You're always so tolerant, and you always say never judge because you know something very well. But in the case of the United States, you've never been there. You never have met anyone besides the GIs living here in Germany. And you have such a strong opinion against the United States. That's not like you." So finally she got me. So we went to the United States. I fully opposed to find everything what I will see there terrible, horrible, and absolutely bad. And the first 2 weeks I defended my prejudges, judgments always. I said, "Well, that is beautiful here, but I know how the states are. This must be an exception. But if you try to be a happy, honest man, after a few hundred exceptions, you have to admit that maybe your picture was wrong." So we got so interested in the society there that we stayed and stayed and stayed and started to work there. And I had 5 children in America, and we lived there, and I had a business, and I just forgot to get back home. So eventually I also wanted to see if there is a special literature in the United States, which is just in that country only, typical, and I found something which is the study of the literature of the Romantics, which is very interesting because it has all this, writers like Cooper, who just glorified the time of going west, and you learned a lot about the people then, and I understood that country a lot better after I was finished with my studies.
The excellent broadcasting host and journalist Amy Goodman has written with her brother David Goodman the book Standing Up Against the Madness. Do you believe that it is the time right now to stand up against madness?
Well, I think for me personally, there are always 2 answers at least possible. The one for me personally is I couldn't live any other way. I'm not a hero. I'm just someone who has no other option. I cannot resist to raise my voice if I see something happening about this unjust and unfair and violates human rights. I'm not doing that because my brain tells me to act now. You know, I do it out of an emotional moment, and I think it's, if you don't stand up now, when will you ever do it? I mean, living with that view towards human rights issues is the only way to live. You are not alive if you don't go against those kind of things. If you tell yourself, I have nothing to do with that, it's the honest issue, which is really basic for will we human beings develop into something better, or are we really truly only animals, but a very bad kind of animals? It will be decided by human rights issues. How is my personal position when it comes down to the violation of human rights of women, children, old people, handicapped, and so on? And how tolerant am I towards people who have different beliefs? That is, are human rights issues right by the roots? And if you don't go there, you're not really a human being. I just said you will miss a point where you start to develop yourself as a human being if you just don't accept that issue as one which is important for you. It's my personal opinion. That's the way how I live, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm not a hero. I say that again. I'm just do what I have to do.
The journalist Amy Goodman has stated also that all people are important in extraordinary times. Many of us have been facing quite a lot of difficulties. Do you believe we do live in extraordinary times?
Oh, I certainly believe that. I think we're living in kind of an end time where we have either to get the issues which are in hand. I mean, it's not only our environment, it's our relationships towards each other, our societies. Everything has come to a point where you have to make decisions and you have to do it fast. I think we cannot miss one single person. We need all the power mankind can develop towards better solutions. So yes, I do believe that strongly.
What is democracy meaning to you?
Democracy is for me the right of the individual to say and believe and think whatever he or she wants, but to do only what is in a consensus of not hurting someone else, the best for all of us.
How do you think about liberty for all people?
Well, liberty for all people is a wonderful idea, but you, like with all those kind of words, they are big words. What does liberty mean? You put 10 people in one room out of one country, each one person out of each country, you know, and you talk about liberty, and everyone should paint a picture what liberty means for him or her, and you will get 50 answers. We have to come to an understanding of a basic study about what liberty means, a minimum, you know. And I think all men should be free. Yeah, I believe that strongly. But the freedom has also limits. There's no freedom without limits, without acceptance of rules, without acceptance of differences in opinions in people in situations. So it's not an easy issue, liberty.
A famous German politician has stated recently during a public speech that Germany and Europe will be not able anymore in the future to afford the luxury of democracy. How do you think about such a horrible statement, as we do know the dark times during 1933 to 1945?
Exactly. You take my answer. I just wanted to remind that we had already a guy in 1933 who was also believing that we cannot afford democracy any longer. We all know how that has ended. I mean, of course, the answer is very simple. This is an absolutely nonsense to say something like this. It's just horrible. We cannot afford not to develop democracy and develop it in a way that it's able to solve the obvious problems our world has. If we don't do that, it's all over in a very short time, maybe already for our children.
One of my grandparents is a French citizen and former French Army officer of the First French Army, Mr. Hedy Savarat. However, I'm very thankful that some German students during the dictatorship, which has taken place between the years 1933 to 1945, took a stand against dictatorship and war. Sophie and Hans Scholl and their friend Christian Probst and other people related to the group White Rose have been speaking out as a part of the truth. And as many of us do know, these precious students have got betrayed and have been executed by the German so-called People's Court. As we do live in extraordinary times, do you believe it is our duty to stand against the madness, against war, and to take action for democracy, civil liberty, rights, and peace?
It's our absolute duty, and not only for our future and for the outside. It's very, very important for ourselves as a human being. You know, you cannot develop as a human being if you don't take a stand in those kind of issues. And for the politicians and the society, I have to say, the Scholls are a good example for how we should not go along with those kind of issues. It's not enough to have a memory about some people who stood up. It's not enough to call a university in the Brown Munich of 1933 to call today the university there the Geschwister Scholl University. You know, it's not enough to memorize. It is important to look what they have done and what others have lived for and have died for, and to do something. Forget about fear, forget about hardship, forget about troubles in the workplace, forget about not being promoted, forget about all this. Think about yourself, about your soul, about your development, and do something so that when you go to bed in the night, you feel good about yourself.
The human rights organization PERASPER and the well-known American Civil Liberty Union do cooperate to protect the human rights. Could you explain how do you cooperate with the ACLU?
Well, yes, we do. They have always some cases they just support with candlelight watches in front of the prisons where somebody is killed, and with statements, and we support with the people who we work with in the United States. We support those kind of events, and we do whatever we can in writing to the American government, supporting the position of the ACLU from the outside, which gets a lot more attention than from the inside. It's quite often the case. Don't ask me why. Much smaller than the ACLU and much less powerful, but still, it makes a difference when we, from the outside, and show our disgust about a country which calls itself a Christian country and is at the same time believing that it's right to kill people in a legal procedure.
Death penalty is a quite serious issue, and it's still a current issue in the United States of America. How do you think about the death penalty?
For me, it's there is absolutely no, besides, I think it's a terrible thing to kill. It violates the basic law, which is set in all religions, by the way, not only in the Christian one. But it's also under the political point of view and the justice point of view, ridiculous. I mean, you're not going in someone's house who has stolen something and steal his knives and forks or his coffee cups to punish him. Yeah? That's just not logic. And you don't show somebody that he did something wrong when he killed someone by killing him. If two do the same thing, it's not the same, you know. And if the state is allowed to kill, then all I'm saying is, well, killing is allowed, but you have to have the power to do so. And that can't be the teaching we want to send out.
Media.
No killing at all. No war, no killing by either punishment, no killing at all.
Media moguls. How do you think about media moguls? Do they own the airwaves?
Well, I don't have really an opinion to that. It's just an issue I can't really say a lot of it.
How do you think about independent media, such as Independent Broadcasting Service, Liberty, which has been founded in Leeds, West Yorkshire, the United Kingdom?
I love those kind of medias because they are the only way that we get halfway to the truth. I just had a case coming back to the Iran issue where a German merchant who was of Iran descent had a business here in Germany and was accused of supporting an atomic weapon war with his business and sent to prison for that, and he was also prosecuted. But finally, a lower court corrected the Bundesgerichtshof and sent this man out of prison and said, if there's not even a proof that this country has any atomic weapon or is preparing an atomic war, how can someone support an atomic war which is not prepared there? So I think, and coming back to your question, the media, none of the official medias, none of our big newspapers, no Spiegel, no Rundschau, no Frankfurt Allgemeine, not any of those, reported about this sensational issue that a lower court, the Oberlandesgericht in Karlsruhe, corrected the Bundesgerichtshof and set someone free who they accused of supporting an atomic war. This is such a sensation. But they all, because not to anger our American friends, they didn't put that anywhere, not even on front page, not to talk about it. That would be the place where it really had belonged to. It didn't happen at all. So if we wouldn't have the small media, the independent, who would ever report about things like that?
Do you have any idea where all these concerns do come from, that the country of Iran could be a serious threat with nuclear weapons against the United States of America and probably even Israel?
Yes, sir. Well, it's very simple to answer. It's the same issue as it was in Iraq. Iran is very well situated in the oil reserve field, say. It's just a country, especially the American interests are high on getting that in their hands. And so they are very easygoing with those kind of things. They have this stupid regime there, this Mullah, who play with that threat. Be nice to us or we will. And so they give the American alliance a chance to say that's too dangerous, we have to do something before they do something, and so on. So it's all about money, all about oil, all about power.
100,000 White Roses campaign, you are planning to give away in a couple of weeks about 100,000 White Roses. Then this event will take place, and what do you want to express with such a campaign?
In our accountings in the last 3 years, more than 100,000 people worldwide lost their lives by violating human rights. And we want to, with each single host, we want to remind people that they all died because, and we're still here, and we didn't do anything about it. The White Rose should have a piece of memory on those souls who died, because we still haven't done what we have to do. Make this a world where human rights are respected from everyone. This is the event many other organizations we are just putting together now will participate. And it will not be in a couple of weeks, as you said. It will be in a couple of months, just that for the by the end of the year that will happen. And I think we want to give one to each person, one-on-one, and tell them about that people are dying, that women are stoned, that children are dying because human rights are violated, and that we all have the duty to do something about it.
If someone wants to support the human rights organization Per Aspera, where he or she will find some information on the internet, perhaps?
Well, we have, of course, as everyone has, a website. I am looking for someone who is keeping it up. I just don't have the time. But anyway, it's to give the address, it's www.peraspera, in one word, P-E-R-A-S-P-E-R-A, -international.de. And they can, of course, write to us at any time through the internet by Per Aspera SD, all in one word, Per Aspera SD, @AOL.com.
Thank you so much for joining our program, our special coverage about the human rights organization Per Aspera, founded in 1968, 40 years ago, by the author and artist, Mr. Michael Heiser. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest, and I give my best to all your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Liberty and Peace Now on Radio IBS, Independent Broadcasting Service, Liberty. I am Andreas Klamm, host to Liberty and Peace Now. It is very important to take action for democracy, peace, liberty and free speech. If we are going to work together for something good, many of us could learn to experience real peace, love and joy, even in extraordinary times.